Empathy Didn't Get Us to the Stars by Nick Petru. Don't ask how I ended up half buried in rubble on the Sepiadai homeworld with no weapons, no comms, and my guts bulging out my crippled power suit. Don't ask, because I'm still here, and I just watched my division's frigate punch through the bile yellow atmosphere into space, probably planning to come back in a few weeks with more guns. Thinking these very thoughts, I'm almost certainly drawing some of these mind-reading squid bastards right to me. I'd switch to underthought, like this, like the Corps trained me, and buy myself a few recycled breaths, but what's the point? I fought the good fight and did Mother Terra proud. God bless her and her human progeny. Through my cracked visor, I see movement in the iridescent black rubble ahead, where a Sepiadai spawning tower stood less than an hour ago. A lone squid emerges, skin like an oily black leopard. He aims his jelly gun right at me. That's right. I see you. Oop, he heard that. He hears, almost, everything that I think. All six of his pupils contract as he studies me, realizing I'm missing my rifle, pistol, and a good portion of my own blood. He lowers his weapon and edges closer, using his face tentacles to help him traverse the rubble. What's that? Can I see a hint of sadness on his face? Empathy? What if our roles were reversed? Would I see him as I hope he sees me, a pawn in someone else's game? Fear the pawn, compadre. I have children, a handsome boy and a beautiful girl. The squid's tentacles start to snake rhythmically. His skin turns milky white. It's a sign of tranquility. That's it. That's it. I won't die here. I'll be saved. I'll be the bridge between our species, our worlds. Human and Sepiadai, united. He's right over me now. One tentacle meandering cautiously towards my outstretched arm. Got you. Motors whir, my hand clamps shut. I yank his face towards my chest, then bring my free fist straight down on the back of his head, splattering his cartilage skull. Ink oozes down my visor, following the cracks. I shove my kill off of me, but keep a hold of his jelly gun. Empathy didn't get us to the stars, and it won't save you. Yes, you squid bastards. Come choke on a piece of me. The end. Hello kids, welcome to episode 3 of Spinning Yarns with Nick and Paddy, a podcast created by my writing partner Nick Petru and I, Patrick McCarthy, where we'll be immersing ourselves in the world of the written words and attempting to be as entertaining and as smart-ass as possible. Before we commence, we'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land in which we meet, the Whadjuk people of the Noongar Nation, and pay respects to their continuing culture and the contribution they make to the life of this city and this region and their leaders past, present, and emerging. Nicholas, how the fuck are you?
Not too bad. I'm a bit upset because I don't have scotch today, only wine, but it'll have to do.
You can add scotch. I've got scotch.
That's not scotch.
I've got...
That's bleach.
This stuff. I've got this amber liquid.
Bleach and piss.
Yeah, true. I'm really excited though because I haven't had a baby yet. You know, so let's see how it goes.
Cheers. Yeah, I'm really excited because I haven't had a drink since yesterday.
Oh, yum.
It's terrible.
Oh, so good. Fuck.
I really don't envy you, man. It's horrible stuff. It's the cheapest scotch you can buy.
Yummy. Dude, yum.
Troll wow. Piss.
Goodness me. That's great.
Liquefied smegma.
That's the most disgusting fucking word in the English language. For anyone listening in and doesn't understand what smegma means, it's knob cheese. So, the story we read at the outset, fuck, what was it called?
Empathy didn't get us to the stars.
So, like, what happened there, man? That was mental.
I was actually listening to a lot of Warhammer 40k audiobooks at the time, and I was like super into them. I still am. It was the Eisenhorn trilogy. Absolutely love that. And I just wanted to write something like fun and pulpy and without ripping off their intellectual property. So I just made up my own little story in that vein.
Nice.
And I intended to submit it to a couple of magazines that take smaller fiction, so that whole thing was only about 400 words. Just a nice little nugget, really.
Yeah, it was a weird tidbit, wasn't it? Compared to some of the other stuff we write. It was good, though, man. I thought it was like, it was really funny.
It was fun.
I'm glad that we agreed on that voice.
I can't imagine it being narrated any other way now. Like, it's perfect.
Yeah, I think we were gonna, I don't know. We've read a couple stories out on the first two episodes, you know, and like, some of them were quite somber and maybe necessitated a different sort of mood, but that one was just like, that was really funny. I just had like, I had Spotswood in my head from Team America World Police, the leader in the suit.
Yeah.
Spotswood. It's just such a funny voice. Now, suck my cap. But yeah, so how did you go magazine submissions wise? Did any take us?
I submitted to Daily Science Fiction and got the old rejection, and then also beautiful. To Molotov Cocktail, which I've got a story with them at the moment. I'm going to find out today if that got accepted. So nice. I'm really excited.
So what's Molotov Cocktail? Another
like I guess like a flash fiction market. They tend to go for stuff under 600 words generally.
Cool.
But they just had a competition. It's a monster theme, and that's why I wrote that the salt thing story.
Yeah,
that's the one I'm gonna find out about
tonight. Coming up in a future episode. It's a good one, ladies and gentlemen. It's a good story. Well, nice, dude. Yeah, for sure. Nicely done. Well, I'm glad you got rejected because it was a piece of shit. No, but it was actually really funny. I just always love, like, even if you can write something very, very emotional and emotionally attuned to the characters, and something maybe with a tragic bent, and atmospheric, and maybe even horror-ridden as well, because you really love your horror, because you said you're a real grim fuck. But you can also try your hand at something just like, as you said, like pulpy, maybe even like, you're one of my best friends, a little bit silly, and still put so much rich detail into like the descriptions of the action and the environment and the character's psyche, and the dialogue's always so interesting. I was reading it and just having such a good time.
Mm.
As you can probably tell, because we just left in all the bleepers. Funny. I should probably do it forever now.
Cheers, man.
You are welcome. In this episode segment of Stories We Love, we're going to be talking about a character we love, Jimmy McNulty. From The Wire. The detective archetype, whether they're suave and sophisticated, laissez-faire and laconic, shabby and substance abused, lovelorn and lonely, no other collective group of fictional characters is as ubiquitous nor as profoundly human as the soulful, sensitive sleuth. Though their aforementioned ubiquity has threatened to render them a total cliche, clever storytellers throughout the ages have come time and time again to drink at the well of the detective, an archetype more inextricable from the perpetual plight of the human condition than many others combined. Rarely a picture of calm contentment, the detective is always chasing something, hunting someone, fixating obsessively on the case-cracking clue and the missing piece of their own heart. In their dogged pursuit, they leave tatters and shreds of their own lives strewn about everywhere, hoping to achieve completion or satisfaction without ever truly putting the hard work into becoming a healthier, more well-rounded person. They're a marvellous mess, the best and worst of us, so capable yet conflicted, you've no clue whether to give them a kick or a cuddle. They're Sherlock Holmes, Veronica Mars, Inspector Frost, Catherine Kayward, Grim Fandango, Miss Marple, even fucking Batman. But for our money, there has never been a fictional detective who better epitomized the tormented soul turned relentlessly flawed criminal investigator than Jimmy, the fuck did I do, McNulty. The ostensible lead character of David Simon's eternally acclaimed HBO drama series, The Wire, McNulty is, as his superior Lieutenant Rawls repeatedly describes him, a gaping arsehole. Though blessed with incisive intellect, a quick wit, and striking leading man handsomeness, English actor Dominic West's portrayal of McNulty was as unflattering, uncompromising, and un-Hollywood as they come. Stubborn, vain, arrogant, treacherous, deceitful, vengeful, paranoid, completely obsessed, and incorrigibly drunk, McNulty's list of character traits seems torn right out of a villain's handbook. Yet these grievous flaws, these extreme deficiencies, are tragically the facets that make him, in the parlance of Baltimore Police Department, good police. His talent and success as a homicide detective come at a heavy cost, to him and to all those around him, to the extent that many of the show's greatest moments show him taking one step forward as a cop and two steps backward as a man. An uncomfortably keen exploration of toxic masculinity, McNulty's path leads him to commit many unsavory acts in the pursuit of the greater good, though whether that be for society or himself is the eternal quandary. He's a womanizer, a drinker, a liar, a cheater, a betrayer. But where lesser incarnations of the detective archetype possess these traits to gift the character with an edgy charm, McNulty alone appears to truly live with them, and it's sad to see. The Wire's raw and truthful modus operandi sees its fictional characters pushed to their absolute limits with ruthless verisimilitude, and Jimmy McNulty is chief among them. He may solve murders, take down criminal empires, convict psychopaths, and fight institutional corruption with admirable dedication, but we follow him so closely, forced to examine him at his ugliest, that we can see how that dedication we admire comes from somewhere dark and perverse. Perpetually searching yet hopelessly dissatisfied, McNulty eschews age-old detective clichés by being utterly, heart-wrenchingly human, a man engineering his own downfall, one tragic step at a time. Jimmy McNulty, the greatest fictional detective in history. The Truth, or I'm Not Actually Catching the Bus Because I Enjoy It, by Patrick McCarthy. I was born and raised in an honest house by two paragons, she Scott and him Scouse, who encouraged me to always aim high and above all detest the weaving of lies. We deserve the truth, they'd firmly assert, and though honesty may certainly hurt, we must never think of memory or fate as marionettes to manipulate. Yet I have come to know we all lie when it serves, and so here I stand, a man-sized frayed nerve, to come clean to you all about something dumb that I should have told you about on day one. Now I sense the tension in the air right now, but I swear to you all my most solemn vow that no one was hurt and neither was I, just a stupid act in which I lost my pride. I was up in Scarborough, tearing it up mean, out with some friends, you all know Christine. I'd had a few G&Ts and a couple of jars and danced with abandon beneath autumn stars. 'Twas the beginning of March and was having a ball, but when the night ended, I made the atrocious call to take to the wheel with a few Dexies in tow to ward off the worst of alcohol's blow. But as we all know, those pills aren't magic. And so to the cops, I must have looked tragic. 2 in the morning, no cars around, no one else to drown out the relentless sound of my tunes pumping in the dead of night, shrieking the Bee Gees with all of my might. More than a woman, soothing heart and soul, until their sirens put me in a hole. I saw the flashing lights, forced me to park, and all I could think was get completely fucked. Officer Hume shone a light in my face, and he must have looked like I was from outer space. Drunken and gurning, certainly a mess, but best of all clad in a pretty white dress, cut above the knees, and a cowboy hat, looking the epitome of an absolute twat. "Hello, Ossifer,"
For me, what need you?
And I'd handcuffs on before I knew what to do. Now, they were decent men and had a healthy laugh at my goofy look and my stay and a half, but they ultimately told me I'd appear in front of a judge. And so it was clear that I'd done something fucked. Terribly so. Endangered lives and given death a fair go at plucking me from this life I so love and sending me on to my friends up above. $1,000. No car for 9 months. A small price to pay for this soppy cunt. Now, I'm not too sure if this was a good idea, but while I'm standing and since you're both here, I'll say to you all, though I could have died, I love you, Mum and Dad, and I shouldn't have lied. Now I'm broke with no car, but gifted a lesson. And thanks to you all for hearing out my confession. The end.
Well, that was fun.
The poem?
Yeah.
Thanks. It was fun to write. Scary to write, but really fun to write and perform too, you know. I got arrested for drink driving at the start of March this year, 2021. I was significantly over the limit. And I'd done it a couple times before, you know, which was the stupid thing. Like, and I, you know, everyone, I think a few of my friends we're all drink driving and everything, you know, like just like a couple beers, couple G&T, like you wouldn't even worry about it. And I just got fucking pinged, you know that. And I was all geared up. I was in makeup. I was in a dress. I was, yeah, as I said, like significantly over the limit to the point when they pulled me over at 2 a.m. and there was no one else around and I was 2 minutes from my house. I was just like,
that's rough.
You don't even have to breathalyze me, eh? Like, I'm good. Just put me in the paddy wagon. It's fine.
But the honor. The honest truth of it, though, I think you said, like, you know, you gained a lesson from it, and that lesson could have come at a far harsher price, you know, like...
Definitely. Oh, man.
It's probably good that you got caught.
Definitely. I was super... And I had to go to court, you know, like, you know, I was in there with, like, all these fucking mutants who were, you know, perfectly lovely, but, like, you know, some of them people were in there for, like, battering cops and knocking people over their cars deliberately. You know, I was just sitting there, like... You know, I went to private school. What the fuck am I doing here? Like, this is ridiculous. Like, and to the point where I was so mortified, like, I didn't tell my parents, who I'm really, really honest and open with and always have been. We, you know, talk about sex and drugs, you know, like, especially like, you know, while we're having sex and that's not funny. I don't actually have sex with my parents. I was really embarrassed. So I was trying to write a poem for a performance about being arrested for drink driving. And every time I try to write it, I just sounded like some fucking, like, yeah, I'm really, like, cool and edgy. Like, yeah, like, I fucking got arrested, you know? And, and I was like, this is lame. So when I realized that I had to admit it to my parents on stage, you know, for them hearing it for the first time in front of all these people, that's when, like, all the rhymes came, like, really, really easily. And I was just sitting there like, fuck. Like, my pen was moving and I was like, fuck, like, I've got to do it. That's why it's got that kind of simple rhyme structure.
Yeah.
That simple rhyme scheme. It's just the... I'm just trying to get the words out simply. The rhymes were really simple and easy.
It felt more like storytelling than the previous two poems you've read. Yeah. Those were just a bit more abstract. It was like chronologically, I wasn't really sure what was going on. But with this one, it's just like you're spinning a yarn.
Plug in the title. Yeah, I think that was pretty much the object. And I think that's why that one went down really well.
You're an object.
Thank you. A couple of the poems I'm doing lately are, I think I've been doing a lot more storytelling in them as opposed to navigating, you know, kind of like vague, maybe even like quite obfuscated and concealed emotions. Like, it can be hard to pass through, especially for the reader and the listener. But like sometimes telling a good story is, that one was really fun to do, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I did. And that's all I have to say about it. So that was episode 3 of Spinning Yarns with Nick and Paddy.
That was a really fun episode. I had a really fun time.
A lot of energy.
I imagine everyone else did as well.
I think it was the wine.
Probably this Johnny Walker Red as well. This is fucking shit. Yeah, really enjoyed your story. Really want to see more stories about squid fucking. I really enjoy performing that drunk driving poem as well. Like that one's a good laugh.
Yeah.
McNulty is a fascinating character. For anyone who hasn't watched The Wire, please get onto it, even though we spoiled the hell out of it.
McNutty.
McNutty, man. So yeah, I guess we're rolling episode 4. As per usual, we're going to conclude every episode with a quote, especially by, or hopefully from, some writer of prominence. For this segment, we've chosen a writer I really admire, especially for her poems. I haven't really read much of her novels, especially her autobiographies, which she's mostly known for, but her name is Maya Angelou. She was an iconic American poet, memoirist, and civil rights activist. She had a career spanned over 50 years and many literary mediums, including essays, poems, plays, novels, autobiographies, movies, and television. A woman whose life dwarfed those of the blandly mortal, Angelou went from fry cooking and sex working to church coordination and international liaison before establishing herself as a writer and public figure of extreme prominence and esteem, befriending the likes of James Baldwin, Malcolm X, and Martin Luther King. Most famous for her autobiography, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, which is a story of her coming of age in which she triumphs over rampant racism and trauma, her strength of character and adoration for the written word pulling her through it all and allowing her to flourish as a self-possessed, dignified young woman more than equipped to take on the world. But despite her insanely turbulent life, its myriad trials and tribulations, Angelou sincerely felt that writing was the only way forward and left us with this quotation. There is no greater agony than bearing an untold story inside you.
Except Thanks. For stepping on Lego. I'm